I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Craig Wilson. It's Friday, 14 December 2012.
Welcome to the final Talk Central podcast of the year, brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On the Talk Central show this week, we talk about the three biggest technology stories of the week, and it's been tough to choose the top three, given we were spoiled for choice, despite the time of year.
As always, we'll pick our biggest winner and loser of the week, or rather our winner and loser of the week, and Craig and I will also choose our product or app of the week. We'll be back right after we've paid the bills.
This is it. 2 years of work, 10,000 pages, two relationships, and one epic promotion. Time for champagne? I think so.
Don't get ambushed. Call for backup. Get Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom, your off-site hosted backup solution. Store and save all of your data online and in real time for half the price of an on-site server. Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom. Backup for your business. SMS 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
So, welcome to Talk Central, our very last show of the year. Craig, you're going on holiday next week. I'll be manning the fort and keeping an eye on news next week, although I suspect it's going to be quite quiet.
Indeed, and I suspect I'll still be casting an eye over the day's headlines, whether I like it or not.
Sure. Anyway, it's been a busy week, surprisingly busy week this week, given that we're heading into the silly season.
Indeed, it's been an oddly busy month, hasn't it? Every week has just been full of breaking stories and breaking news. And
Definitely not complaining. You know, we've in our new format here, we choose the three biggest stories of the week, and we're really spoiled for choice this week. I mean, there were the Mixit retrenchments announced on Monday, the launch of the iPhone 5, the news that Stan Kinnicker is upgrading all of its cinemas.
We had the iTunes getting movies this week, iTunes Store.
Indeed, there's been so much to choose from, but we had to choose three, so we've done that. And let's kick off with the first of those, and that's Telkom's news that they've appointed five new directors to their board.
Indeed.
And some really good names here.
Some really, really big names with some serious clout and really the credentials you'd want to see on this sort of board.
Indeed. And I think the most significant appointment was the appointment of King Louis, the nickname for Louis von Zehner, who until last week, I believe, was deputy CEO at APSA Group.
Right,
the big banking group, highly respected individual. I've had lunch with him on a number of occasions. A really interesting guy to talk to, he was highly respected at APSA, and I think it's a major coup that Telkom has secured him as a non-executive director on its board, because he's going to bring a lot of business acumen,
indeed,
and a lot of understanding of corporate governance to Telkom.
And he's not the only APSA alumni to make the cut, is he?
Indeed, someone who. Who I dealt with a lot as a journalist quite a few years ago, has resurfaced in the form of Santi Buerta. I think a lot of the listeners to the show will remember her. She was an executive director at APSA. She was behind their purchase or their launch of an internet service provider business. It was one of the biggest internet service providers in the country, and if I'm not mistaken, was the subscriber base was eventually sold to Vox Telecom.
Right.
But a really interesting lady, and after she left APSA, she went to MTN and became executive director and head of marketing at MTN, where she did a really good job, I think, of punting the MTN brand. And she's now also on Telkom's board, so some strong people, and some of the other names as well, really good people who've joined the board of Telkom, which is really interesting. You know, they've got a very strong chairman now in the form of Jabu Mabuza,
indeed,
who came out immediately when he was appointed and sort of drew a line in the sand as to where government's responsibilities and roles lie with the company. And now he's, you know, the company has a really strong board of directors with some really good names. So I was saying to Bruce Whitfield from Talk Radio 702 last night on an interview on his business show that, you know, I wonder if Dina Pule, the communications minister, really had this in mind when she intervened at the AGM back in October.
Absolutely.
And voted against the election or re-election of four of Telkom's non-executive directors, including its lead independent non-executive director, Sibusiso Luthuli. That plunged Telkom's board into a crisis. It's gone from that situation to one of the strongest, if not the strongest board I have ever seen at Telkom.
Indeed, and a board packed with people with primarily private sector experience, obviously, and who are going to hopefully treat the company as such.
Indeed, and most important, I think, a board of directors and of top individuals here who aren't going to roll over if a politician comes and tells them what
indeed,
to do.
Indeed, who we certainly won't expect to really have any sympathy for government at the get-go, and will want to treat it like just another shareholder.
Yes. So if this board can stay together, which is an if question.
And also, of course, it remains to be seen who'll be appointed to replace outgoing CEO Nombolelo Moholi.
But the fact that there's a strong board of directors with these strong names on it will make it easier to find the right caliber of talent to fill that CEO role. If it was going to be a weak board, a strong CEO would consider the board of directors and consider whether that board is strong as going to protect that CEO.
Mm, indeed.
And would have looked at the history of this organization and the tight turnover of CEOs. Yeah. And if that board was weak, the chances of getting a high caliber individual would be far less than they are now.
Absolutely. Because also, of course, the high caliber individual is going to be assessing the quality of the board.
And of course, I haven't looked at Telkom's share price today, Friday, but yesterday it ticked up by 3.5% at the close. And in fact, at one stage, it was up over 4%, which is a rare good day for Telkom.
Indeed.
Fallen by around about 45% over the last 12 months.
And suggests
even more than that over a longer period.
Investors are as buoyed by the news as we are.
Indeed. Investors have clearly welcomed the appointments. So, some rare good news for Telkom. Let's hope that news continues into 2013, because this company, South Africa, can't afford this company to fail.
Absolutely.
Craig, the second big story we've chosen this week, of the three we think are the most important, was the announcement yesterday by ICASA that they finally, after about 4 or 5 years in the works, have published the final digital terrestrial television regulations, which will govern the migration from analog to digital TV.
The migration that is already unfortunately running behind schedule.
Running years behind schedule. But this is an important development. There are other hurdles that have to be gotten over, including the issue of government subsidized set-top boxes, the whole ETV lawsuit around conditional access system. A lot of issues that still need to be determined. But ICASA, I think, has done a good job here. I'm sure the broadcasters don't like aspects of these regulations. But
yeah, because also a great portion has been put aside for mobile broadband as opposed to broadcast services.
That's right. I think you'll find the broadcasters will obviously argue in favor of them getting access to more broadband. I think they're obliged to.
Their mandates and their goals, they really have to. Yeah.
Of course. And I think ICASA has done a good job here. Personally, I'd like to see more freed up for broadband, because I think broadband is a lot more important than television. But they have decided to free up two so-called digital dividends for broadband. So it's the entire band of spectrum from 694 to 862 megahertz. It's going to be made available for next generation broadband services.
Which, of course, brings smiles to our faces, at least.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. I thought they've done a good job. It's taken a heck of a long time. Not entirely ICASA's fault by any stretch of the imagination. The whole delays around which standard we were going to choose, the European or the Japanese Brazilian standard, delayed things by a year.
Indeed.
There have been other delays in the process, but they've published the final regulation. So this is it, unless one of the operators takes them to court, which I don't think is going to happen, and then there's a second set of regulations which they have issued in draft form for public comment, which is proposing to open up the market to more competition, to new entrants in the pay TV and free-to-air space.
And these ones are also far more likely to encounter contention from the sort of industry players. There's been a lot of back and forth about these already.
Yeah.
Just in the discussions of getting to this point of the draft.
Yeah. No, indeed. This is the process of opening up to competition, and the incumbents will no doubt fight it tooth and nail to protect their turf. But it's good news, and let's hope we see more competition in the market. I think MultiChoice does an excellent job at what it does.
Absolutely.
But competition is always good and helps keep people focused and sharp.
Indeed.
So I think it's going to take a little bit of time longer, but hopefully we'll start to see digital television trickling into the market from early next year.
Indeed, as dual illumination starts, yeah. He's looking forward to it.
Indeed. Craig, you went to Pretoria yesterday for an interesting press conference with the former Science and Technology Minister, now the Minister of Home Affairs, Naledi Pandor, where she went into some detail about South Africa's new smart ID cards, which are going to replace the familiar green ID books. This is something that's been coming for about 15 years.
Indeed.
It was a part of the whole original Harness project of the Home Affairs National Identification System project. I don't know if they call it harness anymore. I don't think they do.
There's still plenty of acronyms floating around, though. There's also a new population database that's being looked at.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the same.
It's all the same sort of thing
that's been going on for a long time. Anyway, these cards are coming. What does it mean for you and me?
At the moment, not very much. Eventually, they will be rolled out, hopefully in the next year. Pando went to
early next year, she said.
Great lengths to talk about the importance of meeting these timelines, though. The idea is to, once the process starts, hopefully in the first quarter of next year, is that within 4 years, the transition will be complete, and the green barcoded ID books that we know and love or hate will be a thing of the past. What was interesting was some of the talk about the technical details of the cards. As expected, they're going to include a microchip with biometric information. The only thing that's been guaranteed in terms of that is fingerprint data, and the idea that being one of the methods of verification. There's also discussions about perhaps having a PIN link to the card, so that the combination of fingerprint and a unique PIN would be used for identification and for verification. But we'll wait and see. They haven't finalized all of the details about this yet.
It's getting a bit late if they're going to be putting these things into the market.
Indeed. There's also, you know, I think one of the things they're concerned about is making sure that it matches up to best practice internationally, and that these cards will match what other nations are doing, because they may be used with automatic reading machines and so on, like you're seeing at airports now with biometric passports. I don't know if you've had the experience yet.
Yes, I have.
I went through Dubai with a biometric passport and didn't have to see a single human being. It scanned my face, I popped the passport in the right slot, and off I went.
I have an EU passport, and whenever I go to Germany, I just do the same.
Exactly, that's the one I used, yeah. So we're going to see biometrics of some sort. We're also going to see the information actually on the card will be laser engraved using a system that supposedly makes them tamper-proof. It has something to do with layers of the card that are laser cut, and that it's incredibly precise and very, very difficult to counterfeit. The most interesting thing, I suppose, affecting the man on the street is the cost. I asked Pando what they expected the cards to cost, and she said that they're hoping to keep the costs in line with what a current ID book costs, if not lower. But there's also been the suggestion...
How much does a current ID book cost? I haven't been to Home Affairs in years.
I don't know. I seem to remember it being around 200 Rand. It was about half of what a South African passport is, and that's about 400.
Okay. I didn't realize it was that high.
But also, there has been talk I've seen in other stories about this recently, that the department has suggested that the first issue of a card would be free to encourage the switchover to happen quickly too, which makes sense. If you want people to pay,
I'll go.
They're going to hold out for as long as possible.
As you know, Craig, I can never find my ID book when I need it.
Indeed,
it
so in a wallet, card you could put in your wallet would be
much better, yes.
Would be ideal. So we should hopefully see these next year. The department is very eager to get this ball rolling because it realizes the sooner it starts, the sooner it finishes. And the fact that the first cards were actually meant to be out this year. So again, as is something unfortunately we've had to get used to, deadline has gone whooshing past. And the hope is that there won't be too much of a delay before the process actually kicks off.
Yes. Who said that? Douglas Adams.
I think that's his, yes. I love the sound of deadline.
As it wishes past.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Cool. Well, that covers the news this week. Let's move on right on to our next feature, and that's winners and losers. And just a reminder, this can be people or companies. And this week we've got two companies, in fact. And the first one is our very own mobile operator, MTN, which we've chosen because, Craig, you travelled all over Johannesburg this week to test the LTE networks of ATA, Vodacom, and MTN.
Indeed.
And MTN has emerged in our testing, at least, and we must emphasize this was not scientific, but is indicative of what consumers can expect in
indeed,
the field.
Indeed.
MTN was the clear winner.
Indeed. What we did was, so we picked a selection of spots where, according to each operator's coverage map, they had excellent 3G coverage. As there's quite varied, actually, across the networks who covers what. And it's also worth noting that ATA's network is a trial network and not a commercial network.
Indeed.
And as such, won't be, it doesn't have to have the levels of stability that a commercial network does, because obviously they're fiddling it and tweaking it. But we thought, as we had an ATA SIM available, we would try that one as well. So we went to three, we took the three, Vodacom, MTN, and ATA, went to five locations around Johannesburg. And yes, MTN came away as the clear winner.
In terms of speed.
Vodacom, yes.
It should be noted, one in terms of ping times, the time it takes for a packet of data to
sort of
traverse the network,
yes,
do a round trip on the network. Vodacom one there, which suggests that Vodacom is better suited for
gaming, for streaming, gaming, that sort
for,
of thing.
Well, not for streaming, but certainly for gaming, and for perhaps for guys who are doing automated stock trades and that sort of thing.
Sure, and it's also worth mentioning that Vodacom was very, very, very consistent. I found even in some instances the range of speeds that an MTN would give over four or five tests varied quite considerably more than Vodacom did, even if the Vodacom speed was lower. You know, for example, in Ilovo, Vodacom was averaging 9.5 down and about half that up. MTN, meanwhile, we were looking at 28 to 30 fairly consistently.
Yeah.
So we're seeing good speeds.
Those are great real-world speeds from commercial LTE networks.
Indeed. And, you know,
especially given how little spectrum they've had to work with.
Sure. And I went and tested them in sort of outdoor restaurants and this sort of thing, really trying to get the best possible experience. But at the same time, this is what the man in the street's going to do. And I think what's interesting is that we found great variances depending where you are. So I think people who are looking at getting LTE should also consider where they're most going to be using it. And if it's at the office or at home, if possible, if they know anyone who's got an enabled SIM, you're best off actually testing it on site.
Yes.
Because the range of experience varies so much. But it was great to see. You know, the best speed we got was, I think, 41.6 megabit per second down.
And that was at the Cresta Shopping Centre in Randburg.
That's right. There was a Cresta with MTN. And, you know, those kind of speeds are great. You know, for what we're used to, the best line I've ever had, I had the pleasure of having a 10 meg line into my house for 3 months once. And that was the best fixed line service I've ever had. And, you know, when you see 40 coming down,
yes, it's
great. Of course, take a screenshot and send it to a friend overseas and they laugh.
Yes.
You know, this is the kind of progress we need. So great to see MTN performing so well. Great to see the others' networks up and running. And, of course, we'll repeat these tests once ATA and Cell C, of course, have their commercial offerings out in the market too.
And, of course, we like we did this time, we will not be notifying the operators of our intentions or where we'd be going to test their networks. We'll simply be going out there and testing randomly.
Exactly.
Cool.
Onto the picks of the week.
No, you've forgotten about the loser.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have.
Our loser this week is...
Dum-dum-dum, drum roll.
NetOne UEPS Technologies. JSE-listed company, also listed in the US.
Which has been part of the problem, really.
They're
for
in a heap of trouble.
Indeed. So both NetOne and a subsidiary of EBSA called AllPay were vying for a social grants tender to actually facilitate the payments of social grants. And obviously this is an enormous contract given the number of social grants that South Africa has to pay out.
10 billion rand tender.
Right, so this is absolutely massive. And there was some trouble a few months back. EBSA objected to the tender process and said that there were various irregularities with it. And it actually went to court. And the judge found in EBSA's favor, but wasn't willing to overturn the tender because of the disruption it could cause. Obviously, the social grants can't stop or be put on hold for any period of time.
Because there'd be chaos.
Absolutely. So so the decision wasn't overturned, even though the judge did agree that there were irregularities with the process. Now, of course, the Americans, the Securities Exchange and the Federal Bureau of Investigation have weighed in.
It's the U.S. Securities Exchange, what's it called, the SEC?
That's the one.
And the U.S. Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Three U.S. entities, government entities that are investigating this matter. I see there have been reports suggesting that NetOne believes that EBSA went running and ratted on them to the U.S. Indeed. Authorities. And in fact, NetOne has now instituted a legal action against EBSA, a damages claim of $55 million, claiming that their reputation has been damaged through this whole process by AllPay. So it's a really ugly situation. And
One's going to get untidier before it gets any tidier.
I mean, the U.S. authorities are investigating these companies for breaches of the very serious U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act.
Indeed.
The whole thing is mired in lawsuits, and meanwhile there's a very real risk here, as a former colleague of mine, Stuart Theobald, pointed out, who's been following this case very closely, pointed out that there's a very real risk here of this causing a major upheaval in South Africa if this payment of social grants, and there are 15 million people in South Africa, believe it or not,
Taxpayer base
who receive social grants from the government, if those people don't get paid, there's a real potential for social upheaval in South Africa.
Absolutely.
So this is a hell of a story, and one we're going to be following very closely in the months ahead and into next year, which we're certainly going to be in the headlines.
And of course, in the wake of the announcement that the Americans were going to have a closer look, NetOne's share price absolutely plummeted.
Yes.
So not a good week for them, and I think this is what makes them our loser of the week.
Loser of the week, indeed. Cool. Moving right along to our picks, since we are running rapidly out of time. Let me start this week, Craig. I'm picking an iOS app for a change. Runs on both iPhone and iPad, although it's really, really best seen on an iPad and best seen on an iPad with a Retina display. And that's an app called Cool Iris, C-O-O-L-I-R-I-S, one word. It used to be a plugin for web browsers, I think for Firefox, or was it for Chrome? I forget which. I think it's still available for web browsers, but it's now also available as an app for iOS. And what it does is it sucks in pictures from various social media accounts or from Google Image Search. So you can plug in your Instagram details, for example, or you can plug in your Facebook credentials, and then pulls the images out of those social networks or out of Google Images or whatever source, or even the pictures on your iPad, and then puts them on a wall, which a three-dimensional type wall, which you can then scroll through with your finger at high speed. It's like a wall full of pictures, and you can, I think it's brilliant because it allows you to, for example, catch up on Instagram. If you've missed Instagram for a couple of days, it allows you to quickly scan through your Instagram pictures and look for interesting pictures.
It's nice being able to see a whole tiled screen of them as opposed to seeing them one by one on your phone. It's a lovely app.
And Facebook, which I hardly use, and I occasionally log into to see what pictures of family members or whatever people are posting. This is fantastic now because I can just quickly scroll through this wall and see interesting images. For example, if my sister's posted a new picture of her baby, I can just see that quickly
without any of the fluff
of logging into Facebook and seeing all the Facebook ads and all the rest of it. So it's a really cool app. It's iOS only at this time. I have no idea if they've got plans to develop other platforms, but you can also get it on your PC through your browser. I'd really recommend it on your iPad, and it is completely free of charge.
And it's very fitting that it's an iOS app, because I think Cool Iris backwards is Siri, look.
Oh, so Craig, what's your pick?
My pick this week is also an iOS app, and this one will get the Android fans chuckling, I'm sure. It's got to be Google Maps for iOS. After the disaster and the fallout that Apple had when it removed the support for Google Maps, instead forcing users to use iOS maps, most of the data of which, of course, is based on TomTom's information,
yes,
amongst others. You know, that app's been an unmitigated disaster. You've had people in Australia getting lost, potentially in outback areas where they could die. You've had all sorts of...
I really had to laugh at that story.
Yes, you've had all sorts of fallout against Apple's own iOS application. And I've got to say, I downloaded it first thing I heard yesterday morning. I used it to go to Pretoria yesterday for a press conference and back, and it's just absolutely beautiful. Of course, Android users will say, oh, I've had this experience for ages. But it's really just given my iPhone another lease on life, and it's the best navigation app I've had the pleasure of using on it ever.
The only thing missing for now is the thing you can get on Android devices, and that's downloadable maps. So you can
offline maps,
that's what I was looking for. So, which is fantastic, because with offline maps, it doesn't use any data on the network, and you can download, you have to select the area, but you can basically download the whole of Gauteng, for example. Or if you're going overseas, you simply download, if you're going to
the city you're going to, or
download
the city centre,
maps of London for free, and off you go.
Right. And hopefully this will come. But I think what's most interesting about it is that, you know, more and more what I'm seeing is I'm not using very many of Apple's built-in apps. I've moved to Gmail, the Gmail dedicated app instead of the built-in mail client. I'm using the Google Maps instead of iOS Maps. I use Google Calendar. I don't use iCal. Really,
Craig, why aren't you on Android?
So really, my iPhone is a Google device. It's Google data wrapped in an Apple skin.
Right. Okay. You prefer the Apple skin still?
Well, for now, yeah.
Okay, all right. Cool. Well, that's all the time we have for. In fact, we've run over slightly. And it's the last show of the year, so if you're going away, I'm sure most of you are, travel safely, and we'll chat to you in the new year from Craig and myself. Have a great Christmas. Have a great break.
Decent Hanukkah.
Indeed. We'll see you in 2013. Cheers.